Be kind to your mind and smart with your heart. If you want a good day, that's a great way to start. We all live on this planet, so let's all do our part. It's our mission as Earthlings to reach for the stars. If you're here, then you're ready. I know that you are. And we're all gonna do it with kind minds and smart hearts.
Welcome to the Kind Minds, Smart Hearts podcast, where we are building our very own mom village because nobody else is doing it for us. I am so freaking excited to have my friend Evelyn on the podcast tonight. I first fell in love with Evelyn when we were recording an episode of her temporarily paused podcast, Twisted Plot Podcast. We connected over our love of Bravo and a very similar flavor of trauma. And now she is a certified personal development coach specializing in awareness, boundaries, and communication. She's too beautiful to be behind a microphone, but she does it so well. And she is one of the best interviewers I've ever heard. And I'm secretly hoping she'll take over this and do this interview. But alas, she's stuck with me for now. Evelyn, thank you so much for being here. How the heck are you?
Oh my gosh. So basically, you're the coach now. My coach, anyways, I'll be calling you every
Please do. Anytime.
Yeah, that was amazing. Thank you so much. I too am in love with you. So that works out for both of us.
Okay, good. It's good to have a mutual feeling there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Love is definitely there. Aw, that's so sweet. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. It's all very true. And I hope I got the title right. I made sure to type it out so that I wouldn't mess it up because it's a lot of words, but they're all very important words. And we're going to talk about them in just a minute. But first, I want you to tell us about your family, because this is a family podcast.
Of course. Well, I'll start from the beginning. It was Friday the 13th, 1982. Full moon.
Was it a Friday?
Was indeed. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yes. My father needed to have his dinner. No, I won't go all the way back, but
I was like, all right, I'm ready. Buckle in.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my mom, you know, on my birthday every year, my mom has me call her and she tells me the story about the day I was born and how much she suffered.
How lucky are you to have her to call her?
Yes. Yeah, there were no rooms that night, and basically I was born in a closet. So she made it out okay.
Which is why we now like podcast in closets.
Yes.
It's like returning back. It all makes
returning
sense.
Returning back, yeah. Something about inner child, I'm not quite sure. But
yeah.
I come from a very large family and, I always say it's like the Brady Bunch came together and they had me, that would be the best way to describe it. So I had a lot of family systems happening there. And now currently I am married. I have two beautiful daughters, a dog Buddy who is going deaf, unfortunately, and a tortoise, Mr. T, who, he's probably the most easygoing out of all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got a pretty chill attitude.
I've met him via Zoom before, and he was fairly chill, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
But how is his hearing?
His hearing?
Better than Buddy's?
Better than Buddy's. I would say that he needs to get his nails done because they're growing. Like, I don't know what you're supposed to do. Are you supposed to take them in to get manicures?
Torticures?
I don't know what to do. They look a little too long. I don't know. What did the dinosaurs do back then? Like, just scraped it on rocks, right?
It must be just like a natural scraping thing. Maybe he needs more scrapers.
Maybe take them out. And then rough. I was like worried about his little tortoise belly, like rubbing against. I mean, they did it for a lot of years. I'm sure that he'd be fine.
Okay. Did you ever think you were going to be a tortoise person?
No. I'm not even on tortoise talk. Like, I feel like I should invest more in
this.
That.
Is really, yeah, this is a potential niche for you. I think you should look into it more. This is like me and the snails. We got fish. I was not ready to be a fish person. And now I have 9 snails and I care more about the snails than the fish at this point. And I never thought we would. I wrote a strongly worded email to a snail salesman the other day. So
oh, can we hear it? Okay. Next time. Next podcast.
I was so mad. He shipped me 5 dead snails and 5 alive snails, but the alive ones had to be in a bag with the dead ones. And that's just
50%
terrifying for those alive snails.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. You guys, are you okay?
They're not. And the worst part is then it said in the letter to keep them in water for up to a week to see if they would emerge from their shells. So I just was a chump with 5 dead snails and a bowl of water on my kitchen counter for a freaking week. Anyway, sorry.
Today's the day.
Yeah. And I took a picture every day to be like, look, they didn't move. And then I sent the guy the pictures and he still said it was my fault. Anyway.
Oh boy.
I basically told you the email.
Okay.
Let's talk about you though. Okay. Nobody cares about my snails. So, you know, I love an acronym. That's my whole jam. And your certified personal development coaching practice is based around the ABCs. Can you tell us more about the ABCs?
I can. So, coaching, okay, where do I begin? So for this model in particular, I want to focus on harnessing the energy that we have, right? Because every day we wake up with a certain amount of energy, and by way of whoever comes into your sphere, right, your energy could be depleted or you can gain energy. And so for this model, I really focus on preserving your energy, the ABC model. So it starts with awareness at the top. You go down, it's a triangle, I have a little visual. Start with awareness at the top, you go down to boundaries, and then you go over to communication, back up to awareness. So you've got energy right in the middle. And basically, I use all those things in my coaching practice to help my clients really figure out how to preserve their energy in their day-to-day life, because, you know, everybody could use a little bit of energy. It helps with everything that we do, and the more energy, the better. So it's a constantly going up and down. And I think that when we focus and bring awareness to how our energy is being spent, then you get a little clearer idea on how to focus more on what you need, what you want, because that's really where it starts, on figuring out what you need and what you want during the day. So that way you can help others, you know, the whole oxygen mask, put your oxygen mask on first so you can help others. It's very meaningful. I know that a lot of therapists use it. I am not a therapist, but a lot of other therapists, I'm not a therapist, but a lot of other therapists use it. So, but it's definitely something that I like to say, because it's a great visual representation of how we need to take care of ourselves.
I like that. And I think moms especially need more energy. But something that I really like that I latched onto that you just said was that you have to decide first what you need and what you want, which is a lot of what, not just parenting, but just like enjoying your life. It's not necessarily making a plan, but at least knowing yourself and analyzing it ahead of time. So that I'm gonna take that, put it in my pocket, hold on to it, and marinate on it tomorrow while I'm drinking my coffee and getting my energy elsewhere.
Well, I think we don't think about it a lot of the times. We just kind of go through the motions, and depending on how we were, I know I'm gonna go back, how we were raised, right? Depending on how our attachments were younger, we kind of learn how to siphon our energy, whether our parents need it more, right? And that's where we develop codependency habits, like people pleasing and investing energy in other people rather than ourselves. And so I get a lot of people who come to me who are like, I'm so tired of helping other people all the time, and I don't know how to say no because I feel bad and I feel guilt and I feel shame. And really what we're trying to do is just explore and use awareness to figure out, okay, what do you need first, or what do you want first out of your day or out of these relationships? So that way you can go back and say, I need more time for X, Y, Z, so that way I can help more for ABC. I guess I should have started with ABC and X, Y, Z. I know I'm in a different alphabet, but still, that's where we start. So the awareness is the first part, and really getting in touch with your physical body. And, yeah. and when you wake up every day, and how do I feel today? Do I feel good? Do I feel like I slept right? Did I do all these things to help self-care myself mentally, physically, in order to have more energy for the day to start it? Mm-hmm. So it does involve an inventory of you first and foremost, and what you need and want. And you start to go back and you're like, whew, I wasn't doing any of these things for myself, but this is what I really need and want. And then you have to put it into action using the boundaries and mm-hmm. and starting to work with other people. Because if you have a partner, or you have relationships, friendships, parents, siblings that aren't used to you saying, hey, I need some time for this, or I'm not going to be able to help you with that. They're used to you doing everything all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a shock to their system.
Yeah, for
and,
sure.
And where do you go from there? Because they're not used to it. So I'm always telling everyone to be very gentle with themselves when they start the process of awareness and boundaries. And the communication part is key because it helps with all of that. So
this week, dear listeners, I had a situation where I had to text Evelyn because I had a friend who wanted me to do something. And normally I would have just said, okay, I'm there for you. But I felt it in my body. Like, I do not want to do this. I told Evelyn, I was like, I have a long list of nopes. I don't want to do this part, this part, this part. These are the reasons why. Please help me so that I don't change my mind. I've already told her, no, I'm not going to do it, but I'm about to cave. I'm about to like, just give up my own needs. And so it's really hard to do that if you're used to being a people pleaser. And I think a lot of moms are used to neglecting their own wants and needs and people pleasing. Do you talk to a lot of moms? I know you said that you have a lot yes. of like business owners. What do you recommend to moms and their families with people pleasing?
Yes. Oh, so many things. First and foremost is to really, like you said, pay attention to the feelings of resistance. If you feel any resistance when someone asks you something, if you're a people pleaser and you're used to saying yes to the bake sale or the volunteering or anything that comes up, your instinctual nature is going to be sure, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure. Yeah. And that's no problem. Like I can do that. And then you take it and then you realize later on that you can't do it. It's too much. Like it's too much. And then you start to build resentment, and really you're not angry at the other person for asking you, because they don't know your life. They don't know your schedule. They don't know what you're up to. It has nothing to do with them. It's really about you and feeling angry. Like we feel angry with ourselves for saying yes when we kind of knew we didn't want to. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of feelings, and then we have to actually do damage control for what we didn't really want to say yes to in the first place. And so mm-hmm. my advice is really to get in tune with when people are asking you to do things, is to see how that feels. And if you are used to saying sure or yes, or if other people are used to hearing you say, really try and default to, even if you know, and I said this to you, even if you know that you can do it or you have some free time, defaulting or starting to default in that, you know, I'm not quite sure. Let me look at my calendar and get back to you, really starts to put a buffer, like a pause in between, so you can have more time to sit in the awareness of how you feel about whatever is being asked of you. I love it when people text me things because it gives me the time to kind of like buffer and go to the motion and pause, right?
Yeah. Text is so lovely for that, because then you're like, okay, I can really plan how I'm diplomatically going to say no, or as you said, have a pause and really think about whether or not it's something that you're going to be able to do. Yeah. So this situation, I was really lucky because it was a text, but I like that default let me get back to you. I'm not really sure, because if you're face to face with somebody, which is happening more now that we're out in public again.
Oh, yeah. You know. Yeah. It's hard. Feel the pressure. And especially if we, you know, people pleasing is a codependent behavior. It's the umbrella underneath there. And personally, my experience as a recovering codependent, I had a childhood where it was chaotic, and I felt that the only way to keep the peace was by making everybody happy and just doing what everybody said and volunteering and saying yes and just trying to please other people to literally have them keep me in their lives. It was a form of control in a way. That's really what codependency is. And that's, I know we talked a little bit about before, but like narcissism and codependency are like two sides of the same coin, because they both come from that same type of chaotic family systems, household. And so it's so hard, because when that's our default and we are fearful that someone's going to abandon us if we don't help them, or if we're not fulfilling a need that they have, it really truly affects our, like it develops so much fear inside of us that our instincts are to, you better say yes, you better help, or else you'll lose this person, you will be abandoned. Like all the systems go off in our head, fight, flight, freeze. We are just like, yes, of course I'll help. I'll do whatever you want. Right.
Yeah. Cause it's such a bummer, because you know, it's a fear, because it's happened to us before. And this is one of the things I think we bonded on when we first met, was that we just both have that fear of abandonment and the codependency and all of it. It comes from your childhood. And a lot of what I talk about is breaking the cycle. And this is a big way to do that. If you can learn to recognize in yourself, well, this is what I'm gathering. I don't know. This is your area of expertise,
but it's like,
if you're able to recognize it in yourself, then hopefully you can show to your kids, like, this is how you can say no. Like, I can tell you no, and that's okay. And I still love you, and hopefully you still love me. I mean, my son will say to me when I say no sometimes, I don't love you, mama. But then like 2 minutes later, he's like, I'm sorry, I love you.
I didn't mean it.
You know, like, yeah. But he knows that's the way to get, you know, that's the way to get to people. And I don't want him to learn that that's okay. You know, we'll talk about it later. But I think a really good thing to model for your kids is not always saying yes and making sure that you count and that your wants and needs are important.
Yes.
And that's kind of moving to the boundaries part of everything. So tell me more about how you encourage boundary setting.
Yeah, boundaries. So after we have the awareness of, you know, what's happening in our system, where we're triggered, and what's coming up for us, and we kind of identify that we actually need a boundary for something. So then we start to, I recommend my clients, you know, write down physical boundaries that they need, mental boundaries that they need, emotional boundaries. And we just kind of go through those, financial boundaries, like where do we need to stop spending money as much? Or where do I need to spend more time? Time boundaries are huge ones with my clients, because they feel like they get wrapped up in procrastination and they don't know why, when really procrastination is just a symptom of avoiding a feeling. I mean, in basic terms, it's like, what am I avoiding? I ask my clients to ask themselves that when they start to feel they're veering away from something that they need to do. I say, sit with it for 5 minutes, put a boundary on yourself just to sit with it for 5 minutes to figure out, what is it I'm trying to avoid by not completing this task? What am I feeling? Because people aren't used to actually feeling their feelings and accepting that it's okay to feel their feelings. And
it's okay to be uncomfortable for a minute. It's okay to cry. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to sit at the computer and be frustrated because you can't think of the sentence that you want to start with. Yes.
Exactly. And when you avoid those feelings, that's when we start to use different things to numb out. And like, we go on social media, or we, you know, go and have a drink or three of wine. You know, whatever you do to numb out is really just avoiding a feeling. And for me, when I try and when I have to sit with actually what's happening, I get so much more insight out of it. When I put a boundary, like, okay, I'm going to give myself 5 minutes just to, you know, breathe and feel what's really happening inside my system. And I say, oh, you know what? I need some alone time, and I need a boundary of alone time. And I'm going to have to go to my partner and say, hey, you know, I think I need 30 minutes of just quiet time. Can you take the kids for me and go do something? And by the way, if you need alone time, please, you know, communicate that with me, because I want this as a partner, as a partnership. You know, we have to make sure that everybody's needs are getting met, and we can't expect them to, because nobody wants to talk about, they're afraid they're going to step on anybody's toes by asking for something.
Right.
And so we often avoid that. And then we become resentful because the other person isn't magically knowing what we want,
right.
But we don't even know what we want sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So the boundaries are very, very important, and it's good to take the time to sit down and write them out and figure out, because maybe you need a boundary. You see somebody that you know that every time you see them, they trigger you in a certain way. Triggers are really important because they tell us a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I love talking about reactive feelings in us that happen that make those trigger moments, because they tell us so much. They give us so much insight to where we need a boundary.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can be around your friend who rubs you the wrong way, and you were just like, I can't take it.
Yeah.
And when you work on those things and you realize, oh, I can't take it because I have an issue that happened back in 1996 with the same situation and I need to really work on that work myself.
Yeah.
And then you work on it, you kind of figure out what's going on there. And then all of a sudden what they are doing doesn't affect you anymore.
Bother you. Yeah.
And you can be around them again.
Yeah. I've heard a couple of people say this about boundaries, and one of my good friends who passed away a couple of years ago, gave a really good example. So I'm going to give her example.
Yes.
And I love this because everybody that I've heard say this is that you set a boundary on your own terms. So it's not like you're asking another person to do something. You're saying, this is what I will allow to happen to me. And then you take it or leave it. You can either meet me at my boundary or not. And then I have to decide whether or not you not meeting my boundary is enough for me to cut you out of my life or have some other consequence. I don't know. But her example was, she was dating a guy and he wanted to go to strip clubs.
Oh.
And she did not like that. And she said to him, you can go to strip clubs if you like, but you can't do that and date me.
Perfect.
Like,
yeah.
I can't tell you, you know,
you're
a grown up, you can do what you want to do.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to be dating somebody who could. And come to think of it, I actually have dated quite a few people in my life who are like, I am not going to date a smoker. And every time that it was worth it for me to be with that person, I quit smoking.
There you go.
And I have not had a cigarette since 2014. So if that tells you anything.
That's a huge thing. Yes, that's beautiful.
So, you know, like if people set a boundary and it's worth it to you, you'll respect it. And if it's not worth it to you, you won't. And then everybody has to make their choices about where they're going to be for the rest of their lives.
Well, it's a good filter of respect, right?
Right.
Because you can really tell someone who's listening and paying attention, acknowledging, who respectfully appreciates if you say, please don't contact me, or I need some space, and they continually, mm-hmm. because they're feeling anxious or they're feeling whatever they're feeling, and they cross that boundary, it's really hard because you've asked them not to do it and they are doing it. And so it really, really helps kind of filter out in your life who's paying attention and who can respect what you want and need to be
mm-hmm.
really like complete person and feel that security within your own self and to have that own self-worth for yourself, not for other people, for you.
Right.
So, and that's what it's really all about. Because you want to show up as the best version of yourself for other people, but how can you do that when you can't do that for yourself? And so having the boundaries really helps identify what you need in the moment to help get you there. And that's why I love to say that for me, when I talk about boundaries, it's definitely not about cutting people out of your life forever and all this stuff. It's really just to foster more connection and to give other people a chance to show up as their most authentic self for you too. So you can hear, because if they hear you saying, I need a boundary here, I don't feel comfortable with this, I really, I'm going to have to say no. And then they can feel comfortable being like, you know what? I wanted to say no too, right? Yeah, so it kind of opens up a new dialogue and it gives everybody a safe space to show up as their true selves in the best way possible. So it really is about connection on a more authentic level.
Totally agree. And just a deeper closeness. And that is something you can do even with your kids. I was just trying to think, like I say to Max a lot, because Max, when he gets mad, will, like, I'll say something, he's like, that's not funny, mama. Like he doesn't like if I laugh when it wasn't supposed to be funny. And I say, oh, I'm sorry. And I say, but you know what? I don't like talking to people who scream at me. So if you're going to scream at me, I'm going to have to take a break from you for a few minutes. If you're upset, you can tell me in a calm voice, you know?
Yeah.
And he gets that, and he's 3, you know what I mean? And I'm not saying, like, I'm not going to cut my child out of my life if he screams at me, especially not at the age of 3, but like,
no.
it starts with that, like setting about showing him, like, I'm not going to lie, do that. And you can talk to people about, like, I mean, for your kids, I'm trying to give an example for moms listening, but like, do you like it when people scream at you? Would you rather I talk to you in a screaming voice or a non-screaming voice? So,
No, I think it's so important. I think that kids need the boundaries the most, and I think that they can understand it the most. I think they understand it way more than adults do, because we've already gone through our childhood and been conditioned in this state to not understand boundaries. Like there were latchkey kids where they're like, what boundaries? Like there's a lock on the door, do whatever you want. Right. Yeah. Like, so
very true. Do whatever you want. Like we were allowed to do whatever we wanted to do.
Right. I
just posted about that today. My mom would drop me off at the mall for 8 hours and $5. And she had no idea what I was doing for 8 hours. Yeah. I can't imagine doing that with my kids.
We made it through it, but with no boundaries. So no there boundaries. You go.
Okay. And so let's talk about codependency, because I feel like that came from our childhood a lot. And that's another big thing that you talk about with your clients. And I asked you a really hard question and I apologize. And that was to define codependency for me.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I feel like I understand it and sometimes I don't. So what?
Sure.
Help me out.
Codependency is, I'm going to read off of this because I really get nervous when I have to define codependency. It's like different when I'm like living it as opposed to explaining it. And codependency comes from AA, they determined that the alcoholic and the codependent kind of go together. And that's basically that one person who needed to be the codependent who needed to be with someone who needed them. Okay. And their like livelihood depended on that person needing their help and needing and they got their love from that. And so therefore there were a lot of like enabling behaviors that the codependent would exhibit in order to not let the dependent or the other person,
alcoholic person in this case,
live on their own terms, right? Because they're constantly picking up after them, cleaning up, doing all these things, finding their lost wallet, you know, just doing different things that made the other person really, it was like a crutch, like to make them not live their own life. And they felt needed that way. And if the other person didn't need them, then basically they would be abandoned and they wouldn't be loved, which is very sad. You know, it is a sad story. And it's a two-person issue there, because the codependent isn't allowing the dependent person to make the mistakes and to let them just make those mistakes or have those issues and figure them out on their own. And it almost becomes like an addiction because they feel like, well, this person needs me. How are they going to survive without me? You know, they can't do it. And then sometimes resentment gets built up and they feel like, if they won't survive without me. And then the dependent person kind of thinks that too. Like, I won't survive without you. How am I going to live? What am I going to do? And that's how this relationship is kind of formed. And it's hard to break because you start to, like, the longer it goes on, the closer enmeshed these two kind of get. And they actually do believe that they will, like, die without each other. Because that's how it feels. It feels like, oh my gosh, if I'm not there to help them, then what are they going to do? It's like a survival thing. How are they going to survive? As if, right? Which is why codependency and narcissism are the two sides of the same coin, right? Because there is a little bit of that, even though it's not really with the intent of that narcissistic is just like, I can do whatever I want. I'm fine. It's a whole nother. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with me.
Yeah.
But it's still not giving the other person a fair chance to really be able to make these autonomous decisions on their own and like letting go of. And that's why in codependency, letting go is just like number one thing. It's like if you it's a control thing. So you got to be able to like breathe and just kind of let go and let other people make the mistakes, which if you grow up in a chaotic household is very, very scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because who is the in the room, right?
Yeah.
Who's going to be able to make those decisions? How are we going to get there? What's going to happen? And that chaos can just brew and brew and brew and you feel out of control, which is why the codependents try and keep as much as they can in control to help keep everything level, calm, safe, sane.
Yeah. It's very interesting. I wonder, and I don't know if you don't, please don't feel like you have to answer this, but I'm trying to think if two people could both play both roles for each other, if that makes sense. Yes.
Oh, they do. Absolutely. They are absolutely. And then you add things in like attachment styles and we got a whole another layer, right? Because then you have avoidant attachment styles which is an insecure attachment style. And then you have anxious attachment style and they kind of flip in and out, but everybody displays codependent behaviors at some point in their life, right? As a whole, when we're born, we need to attach to a caregiver to take care of us and to help us survive. Otherwise we die, right? And so we are dependent in theory on another person, and the other person then becomes like there to take care of us. So it's like a kind of back and forth right there. Now, how the attachment, if it's a secure attachment, however it is developed in those stages, you just kind of, and if there is any trauma that happens, how the family systems are developed, is there, it's all dependent on a lot of that stuff. But that kind of determines the severity of the codependency as we get older. So,
I'm thinking of an example in parenting that I get asked a lot and that I feel a lot sometimes, occasionally, forever, all the time.
sometimes, forever, all the time.
So a lot of people ask me, what do I do if I want to do this gentle parenting style, but my partner doesn't want to, and they feel a lot of pressure to force the other person to do it the way, because a lot of people I think are realizing that, I don't love the term gentle parenting, but whatever it is, conscious parenting, intentional parenting, that this style is more beneficial, evidence-based, it's more beneficial for our kids and how they develop emotionally and mentally. But their partners are not on the same page. And so they feel like they have to like take care of the whole house and like make sure they're helping their partner to do it and all this stuff. And sometimes I feel like I'm in that same boat. And what I think is show your partner that it's working, like model it for them and then let them see it play out. And maybe they'll agree with you. Maybe they won't. But as long as they're not being abusive towards your kids, you kind of have to let them have that relationship, whatever relationship they're going to build with their own child, mm-hmm. that they're going to build, because you can't control it and it sucks. And you wish that you could make everything the way that you want it to be for your kid, but that's the relationship they're going to have with their parent. So
yeah,
as long as they're not being abusive, you just have to let them work it out on their own. That's what I usually tell people. And it is not what they want to hear.
No, I mean, I wish there was a,
yeah,
for those moments, I think that the best, I always default to pause. I always default to pause, especially because it becomes really, it's what's happening inside of us when we see someone not doing something that we really know works and is great and wonderful, but truly, again, out of our control. And the best we can do in those moments is really just, as long as everybody's safe, right? We want to make sure everybody's safe. And it is hard. It is hard because when one parent has a type of parenting style and the other one has a different one. And remember, we come from two different households. We were parented completely different. Right. And therefore, those differences are going to show up in us as parents. And if we're different culturally, how, whatever mm-hmm. the family systems were growing up. And so the best thing to always do is just have, you know, that conscious communication between everybody. And if you find yourself getting activated or triggered in those moments where it's it, where you can feel like, oh, it's, they're not doing it right. Like, right. Like,
just do it the way I want you to do it.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
I find that the most productive things to do is to, like you said, let them work it out themselves, and then kind of get, once you're feeling more in your body and regulated and able to have a discussion about it, and it's the two of you, you need to be able to communicate, right? About these things. And because if it's something that is, that you want to bring to the table that will mm-hmm. be beneficial, you're not necessarily calling the other person out and saying, you did this wrong, right?
Right.
That's not what we want to do as partners, because we don't want to hear that as partners. We want to hear, but we do want to hear, hey, I really like what you did there. We have to remember that they are partners. We, the fathers or mothers of our children, and they do bring a lot to the table. And so if you can come to them with, you know, I notice, and even say this, I felt like a little bit like, I felt some stuff come up for me when you guys were working that out, and I was trying to figure out why. And I realized that, you know, when I was younger, my father would do the same thing. And mm-hmm. it kind of like, I noticed it come up for me, not saying that what you're doing is wrong, but I just wanted to let you know, because, you know, that was like, ooh, it just came up. And if you can be open about those conversations and kind of develop like a safe container for the two of you as partners, then it's just easier to communicate about this parenting stuff when it comes up. And you want to be able to hear the other person, acknowledge the other person, and recognize that this is, you guys are on the same team. Mm-hmm. This is an outside issue, and you want to be able to look at the issue that is outside of you as what you need to work on, and not the person as someone you need to work on, because that's not what it's about. It's about you guys coming together.
Yeah. I really like how you presented that though, because as you said, you know, everybody grows up in whatever house they grew up in. And if you are presenting it, which is the truth, as this triggered me because of what I went through, and maybe you wouldn't have known that because you never went through that. And I just want you to know that, because our child is going to grow up one day and have to go to therapy, because all kids are going to have to go to therapy.
Oh yeah. That's so, just a part of it, right?
Do you want it to be your fault or my fault?
Yeah. It is our fault. Okay.
It's our fault. We're a team.
We're a team.
We traumatize our kids together. Yeah.
There's all sorts of, you know, I went to a parenting workshop, and the woman was beautifully, what, like, I think her name is Vanessa. I can't remember her last name. Put it in the notes. Yeah. But she talked about the main point of being a parent is you're there to protect them. Like you right. are the protector. You are the almighty protector. And at some point in their life, when they feel their first feeling of fear, whatever it is, they go outside and a bird looked at them wrong. I don't know, a crow gave them a side eye. And they're like,
of course it's a crow.
Right? Yeah. And they're like, oh my God, that crow gave me side eye and now I'm cursed. And you know, whatever it is that comes up for them, that is their first moment of trauma or fear that they have. And from that moment on, whether it's small or large, that's when they realize that, you know, oh, something bad can happen to me. And if you don't protect me, then I will die, right? That's when their system is like, that's when their system is activated. And so your role as a parent and parents is to really see that as the main point, right? Protection, 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 and to make sure they feel safe and comfortable. Mm-hmm. And in what way are we going to do it? Because how it was done to us might not have been the right way, but that's the way it was done. And so that's the way that was kind of built into our systems. And that's what we know. Mm-hmm. And so learning it in any other way is going to take some getting used to. And we have to really believe you.
Yeah.
Because that's not how I was raised and how I was raised with, right? Even though, unless we've done like a lot of work and healing trauma to know that maybe that wasn't a way that really did work and that there could have been a different way, that's how we break that kind of generational trauma.
Yeah,
we do work.
And the being safe is so important. I talk about that all the time too. Yeah. And that's something that I got from conscious discipline, which I talk about all the time too, which is my favorite behavioral program that I've studied. I'm sure there are lots of great ones, but this is the one that I learned when I was a teacher, and something that we used to say to our kids, our students every morning in that program is, I'm your safekeeper. I'm here to keep you safe, or it's my job to keep you safe. And they would say, and it's our job to help keep it safe. And,
I love that so much
because and when they came in the classroom, they had to like pick a little, I had these little, toys, and they got to pick which one represented them. And it goes in a little box and you close the box and you shut the lid and it represents them. And like, I didn't come up with this. This is all Becky Bailey conscious discipline stuff, but, they really latched onto that. And they're like, I'm in this box. My teacher is my safekeeper. And so I brought that to my son. I say that to him all the time. I'm like, hey dude, my number one job is to keep you safe. And he knows that. And if you go out there and ask him right now, what's your mom's number one job? You know, he knows it's keep me safe. It's annoying. She always makes me wear a helmet. I hate a helmet, but you know,
I know, but
kids can't learn unless they feel safe. Nobody can learn and nobody can trust you. Nobody will be listening to you if they don't feel safe in the conversation, because they'll be, if you don't feel safe, it's like you're scrambling to find an escape. So
your system will flare up and be like, I can't say anything to this person because I know it doesn't feel safe. Right.
Yeah.
And then what? And then they just don't want to share and they don't want to express what's going on. And so It is so difficult too, because you're also not only trying to help understand another little being's emotions or your partner's emotions, but this is why it's so important to have boundaries and awareness, because you need to understand your own emotions first too. Mm-hmm. You need to know what's going on, what's being set up in my own system that's going to make me maybe say something I don't want to say in that heat of the moment. And then what? Oh, and I feel guilt and shame for saying it, even though I know I could have said it a different way. Mm-hmm. But in that moment, oh, I couldn't stop from saying it, right?
but then also on that note, on the other end, I'm the type, I keep saying type, which is kind and type. I'm the type of person who I try so hard not to say the wrong thing that I won't say anything in the mm-hmm. moment. And then I may mm-hmm. never say anything at all and it'll just stay bottled inside. So finding a balance, I think, is key.
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah. And then you have to do that. In Susan Campbell's book, From Triggered to Tranquil, she talks about a 5 system to really work on triggers. Highly recommend, 10 out of 10, because one of them talks about it goes through all of them it goes through all of them, like you guys know them. It goes through all of these, you know, recognizing that you're triggered and then going back to the reasons of why you're triggered and mm-hmm. what is your trigger signature, something that, you know, gets you every time. Mm. And then really pausing is so powerful in everything that we do, whether it's making a decision or being in that moment where you're feeling like, oh, fight, flight, freeze, mm-hmm. pausing, and then communicating to other people that, hey, I'm feeling a lot of stuff come up for me right now. I don't know what it is, but I would love some time to just kind of take a minute. Would you mind taking care of this really quick while I just go kind of calm down? Because mm-hmm. I swear to God, there's so much insight in that pause. If you're having an argument with your partner, especially, I can give you an example. I was sitting on the couch. Yeah, sitting on the couch with my partner, and he said something and I made a joke. He took the joke the wrong way and that backfired towards me. And instead of just being like, oh, he took the joke the wrong way, right? Oh no, he took the joke wrong. He doesn't understand me. What's going on? And I felt all the feelings coming up in me. And I was like, my system's on fire. My house is burning down, right? And then mm-hmm. in there's this great analogy of your house is on fire, but you're running after the arsonists instead of putting it out in yourself, right? So I said, you know what? I'm just feeling some stuff come up for me. I'm just going to go in that other room and I'm just going to like take a minute. We're good. I just need a minute for right now. I need a pause. And he was kind of confused because I'd never done that before. I think he was expecting a little bit of a friendly banter. And I took myself out into another room and I just kind of started to regulate my system. You know, I started crying really, really hard. And I realized that the bickering and the bantering, that's like a trigger from when I was a kid. And I didn't like hearing my parents do it. And when I hear it, it just feels chaotic and out of control. And I said, I don't want that in my life, right? But for him, it's like a sign of love. Like bickering mm-hmm. and bantering is just like what we do. Mm-hmm. And so once I kind of recognized that, I was able to go back and tell him, you know, like, whoo, had something come up for me. And this is what it was. And he provided a safe space to listen. And I said, I'm sorry, even though it was just a matter of feeling the tension in the air. I said, I'm sorry. And that immediately deactivated his nervous system. And so he was able to hear me. And then we were able to have a conscious conversation and we were able to communicate what was really happening for us. And it was very productive. And I think a lot of the times, you know, we just start feeling feelings and we kind of roll into this conversation and nobody hears anybody. We're just talking to brick walls, right? Yeah. We're just like, nobody's listening to anybody. And there could be, and then we're like, oh, you know, and then pouting and then I'm not going to talk to you about it. And then mm-hmm. it just takes longer. Well, instead you could just pause. What's coming up for me? Why did that bother me? Why do I need to? Because there's something else there mm-hmm. when you're being affected by someone else saying something, because they, who knows? And this goes for everybody out in the world that you meet, not just your partners, right? Like somebody else says something. The mailman's like, says hi wrong. Like, why did they say hi wrong?
Why?
Did I do something wrong? Should I clean my mailbox? I don't know.
Oh my gosh. This, you just triggered me.
Is it about your mailbox?
It wasn't about my mailbox. And it was my fault entirely. I was so awkward because I live in a new neighborhood, you know, and I was checking the mail and one of my neighbors I'd only met once before. I feel like such a ding dong. I don't even remember what I said at this point, but she drove by and she's like, hi. And I was like, hi. And then she said something and I don't even remember what happened, but I just like turned around and I ended the conversation and went in my mailbox and I felt so awkward about it because I didn't handle it well. And so I got home and I don't have her phone number, but I went on Instagram and I found her and I sent her a message and I was like, I'm sorry, I'm so awkward. And oh my gosh.
Oh, there's lots of unpack there.
That's not even important. You said mailbox and it just reminded me of this thing. Anyway.
But that's a moment in time, right? That's exactly the point. It's when these things linger in our systems for longer than they should, because what's the reality of the situation? What happened? I have no idea. You open your mail, then you go home and that's that. You don't know what happened. But that's not when we feel something come up and it lasts for longer. And believe me, this is a tale as old as time for everybody that I have conversations with, because those things that we think of linger in our head is really just, it goes back down to our self-worth and what we're thinking that other person is thinking that we did in that moment.
Right.
What are they going to think that I said or I meant? I didn't mean that. I didn't mean anything by that. But that's just that anxiousness that comes up. And really, who knows? You know, who knows? Who cares? And by their account, they didn't even pay attention.
Right. Yeah. And it's okay to feel any feeling, but some of them are not okay to feel for very long, because the chemicals that your brain releases into your body are dangerous if they stick around for too long. So
yeah.
So you it's takes really up that energy to talk about. Yes, there we go. Okay, look, you did it. You put a bow on it. So
let's up your energy. Here. Yes.
And look, let's talk. I want to bring it to something lighter at the end. I always like to end with a mom hack or a piece of advice or something that you would like to leave moms with. What do you got?
Well, I mean, if I could say anything, a mom hack. I know you asked me this, and I want to say something like really useful, like I know how to cut onions better, or in order to get someone to take out the trash without telling them, you have to do this. Mm-hmm. Although I will say, a friend of mine did say that there's this hack that she went to someone and they said, try this. And it was like, instead of asking someone else to take out the trash, you say, can I take out the trash? And then the person is then, oh, the trash needs to be taken out. I'll take it out. And let me get it for you. Right. Yeah. But when you ask, like, can I feed the dog? And I did it a couple times and it works really well.
Oh,
so
that's helpful.
That's one little thing that maybe, can I clean the dishes? Yeah. Can I cook the dinner? Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Like,
can I brush your teeth?
Can I brush your teeth? Yeah. Kids might be a little bit different. Yeah. They're like, yes, do it all. I don't want to do anything.
Yeah.
My main one would be pause. Really, really pause. The pause has helped me on many, many occasions. And you don't owe people anything. Mm-hmm. You know, you really truly don't. And when you're sacrificing your own mental health, your own needs, your own wants to help other people and not help yourself. I know that we have to take care of our kids. But again, if you're sacrificing yourself and you start to become resentment is something that is really a great indication of needing boundaries. If you start to feel those feelings come up in you, pausing is going to be your number one, like, saving grace, because you're able to really recognize that you need to stop and take a break. And you deserve that pause. Everybody deserves a chance to pause, because there's so much power in it. And you give other people the chance to say, oh, something's going on, instead of pushing through it and just like being everything for everybody. Because people, you want to help people, great, but do it when you're feeling like you really truly, the intention is there to really truly do it, because people can feel that. They can really feel that. So pausing is a beautiful gift I think you can give yourself all the time.
I love it. ABC, XYZ, take ABC, a pause.
XYZ, pause, pause, pause.
Love it. I really do. Okay. So I know you said your podcast is paused temporarily, but are you bringing it back? Tell us where we can find you.
Yes. So actually, I'm really excited to make this announcement. I'll make it here on your podcast.
Oh, exciting.
I created my own national holiday, Jackie.
Oh my gosh.
I mentioned it briefly to you, but on August 8th, I registered with a database that says August 8th. Is National Boundaries Awareness Day. Dad. We're bad because we're bad bitches.
Bad bitches setting boundaries.
Bad bitches setting boundaries. Love it.
Okay, well, we need t-shirts. Yes. So I'll get on that. Yes. And also a really good thing about that is that August is 8 and it's the 8 and the 8s could be B's.
I know.
Oh, you already knew that. Okay, never mind. I'm just already designing in my head.
Please do. I already made a little design because they were like, upload your design. I was like, okay. I got all sweaty because I was like, a decision. Okay.
Well, I love it. That's my half birthday. It is my friend Jolie's birthday. Sweet. And it was one of Max's potential due dates. So August 8th. I love it. 8's my favorite number. So there's all kinds of great things about this day.
I'm very excited. Yes. 8/8 National Boundaries Awareness Day.
Mm. Well, very exciting. Okay. So we'll all look forward to that. But okay. So
Before
so that happens, because there's like months, that's 3 months away. Tell me what's happening before that. What do you, where can we find you on social media? At least?
Okay. So you can find me at Evelyn Marley, and that's where I do a lot of kind of posts about awareness, boundaries, communication, all my favorite topics. And also, if you want to schedule a clarity call with me, you can find it there. I have my link to my calendar so we can get you set up the call. And I just like love interacting with people on there. So if you just want to send a message to say hi and chat, please do. Also, my podcast, Twisted Plot Podcast, I will be starting to ramp that up again. I'm probably not going to start until August or maybe July. Mm-hmm. So expect something out then. And in the meantime, I'm just enjoying working and being present with my kids and doing all this beautiful boundaries work, because it is so beautiful and it's meant for connection. If you can put your mindset around that, then you will be able to really embrace more people in the best, most authentic way. So,
well, I'm really happy for you. I think you found a lane that is made just for you, and it is, it's great. And it gives you an opportunity still to be creative, because you get to make all your reels and stuff on Instagram. Before her, in her previous life, Evelyn was a memer. And
I was,
so,
it's true.
And a video editor extraordinaire. So those talents cannot just be kept in a little box. You've got to let them out somehow. So this provides the opportunity, and then you're helping people. So that's great. I know that that is a calling for you. So happy for you. And Thank you. It's Evelyn Marley. And then are you doing TikTok at Evelyn Marley, or is it Twisted? I've forgotten. I'm sorry.
So on TikTok, I have two accounts. I have Evelyn Marley Coaching, and then I have Twisted Plot Podcast. You know, I haven't really quite figured out TikTok quite yet, and I've just been kind of doing more Instagram stuff, but I just enjoy, like you said, the creative kind of process. I heard, just a side note really quick before we finish.
Yes.
I heard someone say that if a six-year-old can tell another six-year-old, like if they can explain to another six-year-old what you do, mm-hmm, and they understand it, then what you do is clear. And so I asked my 8-year-old daughter, what, you know, do you tell your friends? Because they talk about my mommy does this, my dad does this. And I said, do you tell your friends what I do? What would you say? And they said, oh, and my daughter, she's so sweet. She goes, I tell people that you make videos for people on Instagram who maybe can't get healthcare, like a therapist, or who can't afford a coach, but you make accessible videos for them so that they can get help if they need it, and they can get little ideas to help them through their life and what they do. And then also, if people need, you know, more services, then you can offer those too. And I was like, my heart, yes, I do that. I do do that. Yeah. I think it's so important to share this. My end goal is to make sure that we can all just, you know, inner harmony for outward connection. So
I love it. Well, thank you so much for joining
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And this has been really fun. And please go follow Evelyn and ask her to consult with you and have clarity calls. I didn't know that's what it was called. It sounds very like
a clarity
mystical.
Call. Yeah. Yeah. It's basically just to fit up. We're like a good match together. Yeah. Cause there's a coach for everybody, and what works I might work for you, or maybe I can refer you to another colleague that I have. It just depends on what you're looking for. So
awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you. And everybody else, don't forget to be kind to your minds and smart with your hearts. And if you have questions for me, you can slide into my DMs on Instagram or TikTok or Twitter even, I guess. I'm kind of tweeting these days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Or you can email me, Jackie@kindmindsmarthearts. Kindmindsmarthearts, it's all plural, .com. And I'll talk to you soon. Material presented on Kind Minds Smart Hearts podcast and the bonus episodes are not an attempt to practice medicine or give specific medical or mental health advice. The podcast was created to be entertaining and informative and contains examples from the host's lives and experiences, but does not attempt to cover every mental health issue. It should not replace consultation with your doctor or other qualified mental health specialists. If you believe you or another individual is suffering a mental health crisis or other medical emergency, contact your doctor immediately, seek medical attention immediately in an emergency room, or call 911. Thanks.